Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod, you know by now, that gives real fans a real voice. Nobody comes on this podcast to fence it, ums and ahs, dithers. We don't have any of that on the podcast. Straight views, we're brutal, knowledgeable, but always honest and fair on the FFP.
This Arsenal mentality of, right, I took some big stuff before and now we got packed out by some youngsters and some carcasses and now he should step down. I'm not having it.
And this is one of the things that the Newcastle fans didn't like him for, and they didn't get the, you know, they, no one ever mentioned this in the media, where people are always like, why do the Newcastle fans want Pardew out? Well, it was for runs like this.
In the Premier League, they have a word for it. They call it showboating. I think, why did that word even exist in our vocabulary? I mean, it's a negative connotation to a piece of expression which football is supposed to be about.
My name is Jordan. You can follow me on Twitter at @_JordanJBryan. Just before I introduce my panel for this week, I just want to say a quick thank you to BBC World Service that invited me on behalf of the FFP to come on one of their programmes, World Discussion Friday Gone, to talk about the FIFA election and everything surrounding FIFA. It was very, very good and interesting debate that I had with 19 other football fans. It's unfortunate, actually, because the result literally came in minutes before we had to finish the programme, but it was very, very interesting. Those that want to check out what was said on that discussion, I will tweet a link from the FFP Twitter feed. So those that want to hear that, just check it out and join in on the debates on that one. We'll get to FIFA a little bit later on. My panel this week, I'm joined by our Manchester United fan Marvin, Simeon, who supports Arsenal, and our title chasing Tottenham fan. I've never said that before in my entire life. Ollie, how are we doing, gentlemen?
All good.
Good, good, good.
I am fantastic.
Yeah, I'm sure you are. Unlike last week, I'm a little bit less enthusiastic and excitable for obvious reasons.
Can hear that.
Well, yeah, I'm trying.
Yeah, come
I'm
on, Jordan. You know,
I'm
be
trying.
A professional.
I'm trying.
Put a bit of effort in, mate. Come on.
Let's get into some quick drive-bys. Simeon, what's the first thing that you think new FIFA boss Infantino should do in his new post as head of FIFA?
Firstly, not take any bribes. I think FIFA is really an unaccountable footballing body. I think there needs to be better accountability channels within that body, and I think that I would like him to really take that on and make this body something that is accountable to not only football associations across the world, but also I feel to other supranational bodies, and I feel that that's the big issue with FIFA, that it's just so unaccountable.
Okay, Marvin. Is Marko Arnautović at Stoke a poor man's Ibrahimović?
I think, to be honest with you, I can see the similarities, but poor is generous, right?
Oh, I'm not being harsh. I'm being nice there. Do you think?
Yeah, I think. The Zlat is a brand. Like, people who like arrogant idiots love Ibrahimović, and I'm one of those people. Arnautović is probably at Stoke, which is his level, and he'll never be uttered in the same breath in terms of quality. So poor is generous. I would say homeless. A homeless man's Ibrahimović. Yeah, I'm happy with that.
All right, Ollie, saw the Carling Cup final on Sunday. Manuel Pellegrini took the stance from the start of the competition that he would play Willy Caballero throughout the whole competition. Stuck with him, gave him his word that he would play him if they got to the final. Did so. He ended up being the hero in that final against Liverpool. That stance paid off for him. But do you feel the football managers have a responsibility to fans once they get to a final to play their best team, even if they've given their word to a certain player that he will play if they get to the final? Do travelling fans, once they get to a final, do they owe it to the fans to basically play the best team that can win the game? Or was it important that he kept his word to a member of his team?
That's a tough one. I think that... does it come down to that? Or does it come down to the fans having to trust the manager? If you trust the manager,
I think that it shouldn't really matter who he plays. That's what it comes down to. I don't think that fans should kind of second guess the manager. It's all about how much trust you have in the guy running your team, isn't it? I mean, how many times did we see Ferguson choose certain players that weren't regulars in his league team to play in the FA Cup final or whatever? Certainly towards the end, you know, Sheringham would start the FA Cup final and he'd leave out a couple of other players who were mainstays in the league team. So I don't think it's a big deal if you trust the manager. If you're questioning the manager and you're not quite sure about the reasons and why he does certain things, then it becomes an issue, isn't it? But if the manager is someone who you think, well, you know, I can see why he's done that, and the proof turns out in the decisions he makes over the course of a season, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So if he makes the right choices over the piece and you see that he kind of, you know, he brings in players, they do a job, they're out of the team, they're in the team, but whenever they come in, they do a job, that's fine. When the problems come is when you start trying to be a bit clever, but it's not actually for the benefit of the team. It's about you being clever. And that's kind of, you know, that's where the problems start.
Quickly, what if they'd have lost? Because the headline would have been, you know, manager sticks with his number two, they lose the game. He would have got criticised. Or would you have criticised your manager if he took that stance and they lost? Or would you have been like, look, he stuck with his player, stuck with his word, he trusted him. Okay, we lost, but that isn't the... That's not why I'm the most angry at the defeat.
Well, I just think that if you think about the Caballero thing, he's only come into play at the penalty stage, isn't he? So, you know, up until then, he's had a competent performance, and most of the kind of you know, the focus was on Mignolet for letting in the Fernandinho goal. So essentially, Caballero's only come into play after 120 minutes worth of football, you know, and he's had a competent performance in a pretty poor game. So is it really? Can you say that? Did he put him in the team specially for penalties? I don't think he did. You know, so you can't really say it's a massive great decision one way or the other, because I don't think that he was only called into play after 120 minutes. Do you see what I mean? So I don't really think that, yeah, you know, there's a definitive he won the game for him. Over 120 minutes, one of those sides should have been able to win the game, I think. Man City should have won that game, let's be honest. If anything, the real question is, should Sterling play in the Man City team? Because he had two chances to score and the man can't shoot.
He can't finish, no.
He can't shoot. No. So essentially, I would actually look at it and think, if you're really asking questions about players, I'd be thinking, well, £50 million for him, for a man who can't win you a game like that, I'd be asking serious questions about that, whether Man City are really using their money wisely, because I have to question that.
Okay, all right. So let's get into the first topic of the pod. We're going to go North London and discuss Arsenal and Tottenham. Both sides played on Sunday. Not going to separate the two clubs as part of this topic, because a lot of the points I want to make and questions I want to ask actually kind of entwine both clubs at the same time. So I want to ask a question to Marvin. I'll start with you, because you're the neutral in the room. If Spurs win the Premier League this season, does that make Arsene Wenger's position untenable, or is that a bit of an overreaction?
Well, I think the problem with Arsenal is the reason why you're saying is the position untenable is because Spurs have won it and you haven't, right? But I think Arsenal really just need to take a look at themselves. I think if you don't win the league, regardless of who wins it, I just can't believe why Wenger's position hasn't been untenable up until this point. I mean, I think Jose said it, right? When he was on the way out, he was talking about you guys being specialists in failure. You were the only club that wouldn't sack a manager with such a lengthy period of no league titles. So regardless, I think Spurs compounds it, because now North London will be rocking on one side and it won't be on the Arsenal side, right? But I think, you know, Wenger's position... And you know what, George? I'm actually a Wenger fan, right? I think you guys... I think a lot of Arsenal fans hide behind Arsene Wenger. So when I get in your face, as you know I have over the last couple of days, it's just, Wenger's got to go, Wenger's got to go. It's not, you had your first team out and you couldn't beat youngsters. It's, oh, it's Wenger's this, it's Wenger's that, right? Wenger, you know, he made sure you guys were financially secure. Sorry, I'm laughing because that's bullshit to me. But he made sure you financially secure. He moved you from Highbury, took the clock with you, made sure everything was okay. And now you guys have turned on him like a wild wolf pack. And if it takes a battering from United youngsters to do that, then fair play. But personally, I think he's been riding his luck for years. And, you know, the thing that annoys me about Arsenal fans is, aside from that, the fact that you haven't won the league. But, you know, we always get Champions League, this, that and the other. Nobody cares. And it's almost like there is an arrogance, even with Wenger there, that you have thrown so much shit, right, for the whole season. But when it comes down to the business end, things never change. And the difference being this season that Spurs are doing the business, so showing that it can be done. So I think, yes, his position is untenable, but it's been untenable for ages. And I don't think that will change because Spurs will win it. I think Wenger goes when he's ready. I don't think the board have the bottle to sack him. And I think at the end of the day, they're the people that cut the check.
Mm. Ollie, did we see on Sunday, both sides played, obviously Arsenal lost 3-2 United, Spurs beat Swansea 2-1. Did we see across both those games a strong suggestion as to why both teams seem to be going in different directions, i.e. Spurs on the rise, Arsenal on the decline, in that you have an Arsenal team play with a gimme, really, against a United team, chance to put down a marker, an injury hit United team, Arsenal have no excuses, full team, going for the title, no fight, no inspiration, no idea what they're doing, and lose the game. Whereas you have at Tottenham, they go 1-0 down, like Arsenal, but you didn't play well from what I've heard on Sunday. But you find a way to get two goals, you club together, and you get the 3 points. Is that the difference between the two clubs? One team just doesn't have that kind of togetherness and that kind of drive to see it through when it matters, and Tottenham at the moment appear to have that.
Well, yes and no. I think that you can say that certainly Spurs have got a togetherness there, and the will and the mentality has completely changed under Pochettino, and that's for sure. But you still have to take into account that you were playing Man United. It doesn't matter. You know, you got to take... I just think that there's too much of a... United were there for the taking. It's still Man United. You know, you still got to go to Old Trafford and get a result. And I don't think you can underestimate that. It doesn't matter that Man United had some kids in there and things haven't been going too well, and Van Gaal's under pressure. It's still Man United. You're still going to Man United. You're still going to a club where your record isn't good, and you're still going to play in front of fans who are going to be up for that game. You know, and I think you've got to take that on board as well. And I don't think that, you know, I do think there are questions about Wenger's management and his way he approaches these games. But I also think that because of the record you've got at Man United, I don't think that you can look at it and say it's a real example of where Spurs are and where Arsenal are. Arsenal went to Man United and they lost, right? That sort of stuff happens. I remember last season, Man United went to Liverpool, and I hold my hands up. I thought Man United were going to get beat at Liverpool. Liverpool were in really good form. Man United went there, and I was expecting Man United to get rolled over, and they went there and they completely, you know, they completely outplayed Liverpool. And it was a surprise. But that's what I'm talking about. Man United went there with a team that wasn't, you know, they weren't a team that were doing well. And they did the same to Spurs last season, where Spurs went there and everyone was expecting Spurs to win. Man United won 3-0. So you've still got to take into account that Man United are a team that, okay, they're not doing great, but there's still the remnants there of a club that knows, right, Arsenal are coming, they ain't going to roll us over, we're not having that. And they put a performance in. So it's not, you know, it's not the end of the world, but then I do think with Arsenal that there's a real problem there in terms of them being able to put performances in when they really have to do it. But then, you know, at the end, by the end of this week, it could all change. It could all change for you. So, you know, and then we'll be talking a different story come the pod next Tuesday. So I don't think you're out of it. I don't think, you know, but I do take on Marvin's point as well, that Arsenal fans are in this conceit as well. There's a conceit where Arsenal fans, for instance, are celebrating on the last day of a season when you pip Spurs to the Champions League by 1 point. Now, let's get this straight, right? Over years, over the course of years, you used to finish like 35 points ahead of Spurs. How has it come to a point, right, where Spurs finished a point behind you, and that's reason for Arsenal fans to celebrate? You know, that when you get to that stage, you know you're in trouble. You are in deep, deep trouble, because you're in a situation where, well, we're not going to win the league. We're not going to even compete for it. But we're happy if we can finish a point above Spurs and finish in fourth place, then that's all right. Mm. So as Marvin says, I think the fans are in this as much as the club. And when it goes wrong, then suddenly it's Wenger's fault. But actually, the fans are quite happy to celebrate when you finish fourth. It's not good enough.
I agree. Simeon, there's three things that normally flag up to me in terms of judging a team that I think will win the Premier League every single season. The first one is a team that can come back, teams that go 1-0 down and have that drive to go one, even two goals down, still get a point or even 2 points. Secondly, a team that can win away. Teams that win away at this point of the season, that's always a big sign for me that a team is going to do well. And the third one, and I'm looking at Tottenham here, and this is what's worrying me the most, is when players start scoring goals that don't normally score goals. So defenders that don't normally score goals start scoring goals. Defensive midfielders that don't normally score goals start popping in with some goals. Tottenham are doing that. They're getting goals from all over the pitch, and not just Harry Kane. How worried are you about Tottenham coming up behind us, and how worried are you about Saturday's game?
I mean, my boy Leicester are going to do it. So I've got faith in Leicester doing it this season. I'm not worried about Spurs at all. But no, I want to firstly look onto that point about Arsenal fans are in this for cheering fourth place. I mean, if Spurs finish ahead of Arsenal this season, they'll be releasing a DVD. It doesn't even matter if you win the league. So, I mean, I feel like this is just a part of the banter of football. I think you missed out a key point about a side winning the league. And the truth is that it's momentum and key players driving on that side. And I came on the podcast a few weeks ago and I said, I look at this Arsenal side, and this is when we just beaten Leicester. And I said, even though we beat Leicester, looking at that performance, I don't think we can win the league because we do not have the players who are going to drag us over the line and bring that quality when it is needed. And so just looking at the players who have gone off form, so Sanchez, who could be that player, is completely off form and he's not going to be that guy this season. Giroud is a good player, but he doesn't quite have the support around him. Walcott's completely gone AWOL. And when you look at the teams around us, Leicester, Vardy and Mahrez, and then, you know, they have other people who may pop up like Kante. You look at, you know, City, even though City are kind of off it at the moment, I have faith that a Yaya Toure or an Aguero could easily come to the party at any moment. Even look at Spurs. I mean, you've mentioned players who are scoring who are not quite Kane or Ali, but you know, Kane and Ali are still reliable players in that. And then you've got guys like Son, who comes on and he's still a decent player. So I feel that looking at our side pretty early on, that we didn't have that momentum, that matters. And that's aside from the other issues like a very poor mentality. But my real issue with Wenger, aside from his tactical poverty, is the fact that our first 11 offensively is so reliant, and I said this before, on erratic players. Players who on their day can be good players, but actually consistently have never been able to prove that they can lead a charge. And I'm talking about Theo Walcott, who I think is a good player, but probably now proving himself to be more of a squad player than the player who can really do it, which is a shame because I do think he has a talent. And I think that he's probably been mismanaged. And I agree with Ian Wright in that I do feel that once upon a time, Wenger was really good at nurturing young players and giving them support to take them onto the next level. And a lot of those players left could be at Nasri or Fabregas or Van Persie, but he was good at plucking young players and developing them. That has really stopped. And then you look at players like Ramsey, after his breakthrough season two years ago, completely declined. Oxlade-Chamberlain has never developed. And you've got players like Ali surpassing them. And I feel like the entire infrastructure of Arsenal at the moment is just not working out, which probably said a lot, which is why they probably poached Leicester's scout. Because right now, it just doesn't seem to be working at all.
No. Marvin, I think I'm right in saying that two of the last three times Arsenal have gone to White Hart Lane, we've lost. And the talk, I remember AVB once, and a couple of years ago when you beat us, something about now we're going to go on to beat Arsenal, finish above Arsenal, and on both of those occasions they didn't.
I think he what he said was, didn't he say that Arsenal are in a negative spiral?
That's the one. That's the one, yeah. So do you think, on how important do you feel Saturday's game is, bearing in mind that we've lost there at this point of the season twice out of the last three seasons and still managed to finish above them?
I mean, well, as a neutral, I'll be watching it knowing that for some, you know, you look at those games and I've always thought it's nice for Spurs to beat Arsenal, but Spurs will finish outside of the Champions League. Arsenal won't win the league, but they'll finish within the top four. That's how I've viewed that game, right? And this game takes on a whole different dynamic, right? Because Spurs are legitimate title contenders, right? Even more so than Arsenal. And I think if Spurs win this game, then we could potentially be knocking Arsenal out of the title race, and they could potentially be cementing their place as champions. And that is a dynamic I don't think I've ever seen, Jord. And I'm talking about when I was, you know, working part-time watching football through, you know, supermarket windows. Like, this is a big deal, right? So at the end of the day, it's gonna be big. I actually think, on the grand scheme of things, like, I remember, you know, my driving instructor supported Spurs, and his dad said is the minute you start to believe in Spurs, they'll let you down. That's what he said. So he rang me to say thank you on Sunday, bless him. Right? I'll send him
your driving instructor.
Yeah. My driving instructor from about 15 years ago rang me, because I make sure I don't change my number for days like this, for days like Sunday, George, to say thank you. And I said to him, you know, what are you saying for Saturday? This is a big deal. And he was like, I can't let go of that advice I was given when I was 10 years old. So I'm going into it expecting the worst and hoping for the best. Yeah. I'm like, come on, Harry, you know, this, they're on the ropes. Rashford, nobody knows him, right? And he was like, nah, we just got to take it. But I tell you, if we win that game...
You'll start believing.
Then things are on.
Ollie, well, I want to touch on this a bit more in depth and widen out to other teams as well next week. But just very briefly, a lot of Tottenham fans, I think the secret to their success this year is the fans, for once this year, aren't talking. I've not heard a lot of Tottenham fans running up their mouth, and they've been pretty tolerance and humble, and just one game at a time, top four. Do you think now's the time they need to actually start saying, you know what, we're in a title race here, we can win the league, no, and yeah, we're going to go for the league now?
No.
You know, it's now not time for a bit of confidence and
No, absolutely
they've
not.
They've got this far without doing that. Why would you want them to change their dynamic now?
I'm not saying they should. I'm just wondering if now is the time to like...
And the thing is,
we don't buy it anymore, the whole, oh no, now they actually are in the title race. So you can't keep saying the whole, one game at a time, top four.
Well, no, but that is true though. One game at a time is true. I was asked exactly the same question today by another Arsenal fan who texted me and said that Harry Redknapp...
Does he know me?
He said Harry Redknapp was on TalkSport, and he said if they beat West Ham, then Spurs will win the league. And I'm thinking, well, how can you say that? That's just nonsense. You know, if Spurs... Let's get it straight, right? Before we even get to Arsenal, we've got a massive game tomorrow night against West Ham. West Ham are going to...
They hate you.
They absolutely loathe Tottenham, right? So they are going to throw everything at it to win that game.
Are they
right?
The one team that actually want Arsenal to win the league just so that you guys don't win it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. West Ham loathe Spurs. So they will give everything tomorrow night. So before we even get to Arsenal... You know, it's a bit weird talking about Arsenal before we've even played West Ham. We've got to get through West Ham first.
We sat here when you had just packed us out. You used the word carcass, da-da-da-da-da, we done them, blah, blah, blah. This is the best we've seen. We're beating the big teams. That's the first point. The second point was, that really annoyed me, was when you was talking about Sanchez and you were like, Sanchez has gone on record and said he wants to play for Wenger. Wenger's done this. If you look at what Wenger's done, now we're 3 months down the line. And you're like, if you get packed out by Spurs on Saturday, he should stand down. I am livid. And I'll tell you why I'm livid, right? I am livid because we played awful at the Emirates. But forget the result. Think about the starting 11 that you played on Sunday, right? When I looked at that lineup...
Same Barsanti, wasn't it?
No, I'm talking about our 11, Jordan. When you look at that starting 11, you look at the signings we've made, like Darmian, like Martial, none of them started, right? You're thinking about...
Depay did.
Yeah, Depay did.
And showed his
What, Lingard?
Schneiderlin.
Yeah, but look at the facts, right? You in terms
and,
of
and,
the,
and they those guys weren't cheap.
We were playing.
I mean, that's what
Simeon. We were playing two DMs with no pace as centre backs, right? You had bags of pace. De Gea wasn't troubled for pace, right? He wasn't. You weren't burning out. We're not talking about Blin. Blin can't run 100 meter. Carrick has lost his legs. He hasn't had legs for 3 years. You were nowhere. So when you talk to me about carcass, right? We had a back line of carcasses, and you couldn't do anything. And then for you to now tell me about Wenger, I just can't take this Arsenal mentality of, right, I took some big stuff before, and now we got packed out by some youngsters and some carcasses, and now he should step down. I'm not having it. At least with the Man United fans, we've been united in saying LVG's got to go. And regardless of packing you out, everyone's saying LVG's got to go. There is a consistent message. For you now to tell me about, you know, you talk about Sanchez, yeah, he's gone off the boil. 3 months ago, you were like, Sanchez, what a player. And, you know, he only signed for Arsenal. He wouldn't have signed for anyone else. And I remember saying to you, yeah, but of course he's going to say that. And you were like, no, Wenger. I encourage you to look at the pod and tell me that you did not lick Wenger's ass. You licked it. And Jordan was shaking his head when you licked his ass.
Firstly, I still maintain that the reason, one of the strongest reasons why Ozil and Sanchez did come to Arsenal is because they wanted to be better players. You ask these players, what do you want to achieve? On top of winning titles, they will say, I want to be the best player in the world. And because of Arsene Wenger's previous record of creating players who are quite raw, Henri's, Van Persie's, and making them world class, I think that has been a big attraction, and I still maintain that has been true. But then Wenger has got to do more than just develop individual players, which he's not even doing at the moment. He has to actually build a team that is able to sustain a title challenge. And if you can't win it this season, when the teams who've outspent you are nowhere, and the players who, and the teams who are ahead of you earn considerably less money than yourself, then it completely rips out the argument that you need to outspend the competition, because they're proving that you don't have to. And so this is why I'm saying that his position now has become untenable. That's my point. And I felt that actually there are different managers for different seasons in a club's life. The transition period has happened. We've had stability. We're now at the Emirates. We now have bags of reserves. We've had it for the past two seasons now, at least. He should be delivering. He should have delivered this season, and he hasn't. And that is why I feel that now his position is untenable. So I feel that everything I said still has credibility to it. The only thing was that back then I was singing, and I didn't actually think we'd win the league then. But obviously, when we're top, you have to sing while you're winning.
Yeah. Very, very brief.
All right, you know what? I hear what you're saying, and I was being harsh, but you did annoy me that day, and I just got to call you out on it. But you mentioned Ozil and Sanchez about being the best players. My question to you is, if they really wanted to be the best player they could be, would they achieve that at Real Madrid and Barcelona, or would they achieve it at Arsenal? And the reason why I ask that question, right, is because obviously when a player makes a move, they talk about what they want to be. I want to be the best, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing new there, right? But I personally think they both weren't getting the games, and they came to Arsenal because they wanted to revive their careers where they weren't top of the tree at those teams, and went to another team where they thought that team doesn't win anything, but they get Champions League.
All right, leave that there. We've got to move on.
I love you really, Simeon.
We're going to move on quickly now to talk a little bit about LVG. Now we'll start with Simeon on this one. Do you think LVG deserves a bit of credit for playing the kids as he has done the last couple of weeks, or is this purely down to circumstance?
I find it incredible that the LVG, who spent so much money, now has to be reliant on children. I think this says a lot about his transfer policy. I think it's been very poor, and I think that he's very lucky to be playing Arsene Wenger, who gives away points against his rivals like it's nothing. So actually, I don't agree. I mean, I think he's had nothing else to do. I think that says a lot about him.
His argument was he would argue and say, yeah, but I've got a history of playing kids. This isn't the first time I've done it for previous clubs and brought through kids and trusted kids. That would be his argument.
Well,
it's not luck. I did. This was the plan.
Well, he didn't start the season off saying we're going to bring through young people and play them. He made signings. The signings hadn't largely performed, and then he now had to be reliant on youngsters. That's what I think is significant. And I honestly do feel that LVG has been quite fortunate, to be honest with you. I think he's been very, very fortunate. But you know, United are a huge club, and they will have a huge academy, and there will be players that will be coming through all the time. But I'm not convinced by LVG in the slightest, and I think the way that he's mishandled a lot of key talent like Di Maria and players who have left the club, even their handling of Alvianza has been very, very bizarre. You've got the Chicharito. I think his handling of talent at Man United has been nothing close to a scandal.
Not been great. Ollie, I've heard a few Man United fans the last few days, and even during the game, they were chanting LVG's army, LVG's army. Last week, they wanted him out. Is this just typical fans just swaying when it's going well, we love the manager. When it's going poorly, we want him out. Or is there an underlying hypocrisy amongst the Man United fans here? Because they all, to a man pretty much, wanted him out. Yeah, against Arsenal, when they're winning, he's the god. He falls over on the floor of his clipboard and, oh, we love LVG. What's all that about?
You got to love fans, though, haven't you? I remember seeing a clip of LVG walking off the pitch after a defeat. I can't remember which one it was.
It was the game that you lot were at, I think. I think it was the 1-0 home loss to Southampton.
Yeah. And there's a fan.
A woman.
And they're slating him as he walks to the tunnel. And they're just like, get out, go. And they're giving him grief. Now you look at it and it's, as you say, it's LVG. Fans, they're just certain fans who... One minute they hate him, next minute they love him. I just don't know. To be honest with you, it's difficult. It must be difficult because you just don't know where to stand. And I do wonder sometimes, I'd love to know what Ferguson's thinking up there in the stand. He's always sitting up there laughing and joking, isn't he? Sitting up in the stand. But I'd love to know what he's thinking up there, whether he's thinking, yeah, you know, you thought someone else could come in here and do a better job than me. No one's better than me.
I am the best.
And as this all continues, right, Ferguson's legend. His legend gets bigger and bigger, doesn't it? Because essentially you look at it and you think, wow, this man used to hold this whole club together, right? And now it's all falling apart. And the fans are now, you know, they're like, when Fergie... And, you know, it's difficult for LVG to, you know, to deal with that. And even though he's someone who's achieved what he has in the game, even he's finding it difficult at Man United. But as far as the fans are concerned, yeah, you know, you're always going to get fans who, some of them kind of, you know, some of them give him grief when the results are bad. And then other people will turn on him, who will turn his way when something happens. But I have to say that, again... It's a big game, isn't it? It's still got that cachet. Arsenal, Man United, Man United, Arsenal. You know, you two sides at the start of the Premier League, certainly in the late 90s, early 2000s, you were the two teams going head-to-head for titles. So there's always a thing where no matter how badly Man United are doing, no matter how badly Arsenal are doing, both fans will enjoy that win if it comes along. And it will, for a little while, it will just put all the other problems to the back of your mind. It's understandable.
It's funny that, in a way, as Ollie says there, Ferguson's legend status is getting bigger without him even doing anything. It's almost growing because, like Ollie says there, we're seeing now how good a job he was doing. And he probably is having a little wry smile thinking, yeah, it's not the Man United when I was here. I was doing a really good job. But on the point of the kids, how good are these kids at LVG? As Simeon says, it's kind of been forced to put in. Are they actually of the level of Man United, or is it just simply circumstance? When Rooney and the guys come back, they're back on the training pitch with the under-21s.
I think we're in a land of too early to tell, to be honest, George, right? You know, Lingard's come on quite a bit, and I've still got United fans that think he's rubbish. And if you look at him, he's had such a checkered loan spell. Like, I remember, I think he banged 4 in a game for Birmingham. Then at Brighton, he didn't even make the match day squad. So he's been up and down. So at the moment, you can't help but be encouraged. But, you know, I'm going to sort of temper down my excitement until we see them come in organically, as opposed to, you know, us just being down to the bare bones. I will say, though, that, you know, it's standard fans, right? You know, when Old Trafford's silent and then... Man United score and we go to the other fans, you're not singing anymore, though we haven't done any singing up until that point. Do you know what I mean? It's standard fan banter. I think if you did a quick poll for anybody exiting the ground, LVG next season, yes or no? I think you'd get 99% no. And I don't even know if he wants to be there, to be honest. It's a tough gig, right? But that being said, Ollie's spot on. Like, if you said to me, Marv, who do you want to beat? Who do you want to beat this season? If you could win, if you could win four games, right?
Mm.
Who would you? Who, what would the four you'd want to win? And I would say Liverpool home and away. I would say Man United, Man City at home, and I say Arsenal at home.
Mm.
I hate Arsenal, and I hate Arsenal not because it's Arsenal, but because of the culture that surrounds a club that has not won a league in many years.
All right,
years.
We've done Arsenal now. Yeah. Done Arsenal.
George,
all right.
Just one more point. Yeah.
Before you make your point, if there's one game every year you want to win, who? What game? What fixture would it be?
Liverpool at Anfield.
Okay, go on.
Yeah.
Just checking.
But the only thing I was gonna say is, we, as Man United fans, we know that we're in trouble, right? And youth is not going to put a plaster on where we are. And I agree with Simeon to an extent that there isn't the transfer policies. Although I still think a lot of those players he bought actually aren't the worst players. I think Damian's done well when he stayed fit, etc. But we are in trouble. And that is why I think this defeat, this victory we had, should hurt you the most. Because I've never seen a United team... that bench, when I saw that bench, like, Januzaj was the most exciting player on that bench. It is a devastating blow to Arsenal morale, right? And I loved it.
Well, that's why I've gone missing. I was supposed to ask you all actually after the drive-bys, very briefly. I'm going to ask everyone every week until the end of the season for your winner and three to go down. Start with you, Simeon. Who's going to win the Premier League? In one word.
Can you start somebody else?
Ollie, who can win the Premier League?
Oh, come on, Jordan. Well, we're going to do this every week.
Every week.
Oh, wow. I'm backing my boys. Tottenham going to win it. Yeah, yeah.
Marvin?
I'll go Tottenham.
Okay. Simeon? Now, who you want to win the league? Who do you think will win the league?
It will be a City.
who's going to win the league, Simeon?
It will be a City.
Give me a team.
Be a Leicester City or Man City.
We'll take Leicester. Three to go down? If we assume Villa have gone, so two to join Villa.
Villa. I think Norwich are going to go, which was... A lot of people went on about Leicester the other day and how they did well to get that result against Norwich, but it's Norwich. And Norwich are one of the worst teams in the league. Yeah. So I think Leicester, you know, that was I don't think that was as great a result as everyone was saying. So I'd go Norwich, Villa, and the last one, one of those northeast clubs has got to go, haven't they?
Pick one.
I'm going to go with... I think they're both going to get out of it. I think it's going to be Bournemouth.
Wow, okay. Marvin, two to join Villa?
My mindset is exactly like Oldra. I thought one of these northeast teams should go, but... Bournemouth just don't have enough. I don't think they have enough. So I think Norwich to join Villa as well as Bournemouth as well.
Simeon?
Norwich and Newcastle.
All right, I'm going to move on now to talk about a couple of London clubs, West Ham and Crystal Palace. And ask the question, how high can West Ham go and how low can Crystal Palace go? Start with Marvin on this one. Start with West Ham. They're, I think, 3 points behind your lot, 6 behind City, although they've got a game in hand. Got some hard games coming up: Spurs, Everton, Watford, United in the Cup, and Chelsea. But how high do you feel West Ham can go?
I think they'll finish probably 7th or 8th when the chips fall. I mean, I think Big Sam said it best, where their performances and, you know, outcome of the season is dependent on Dimitri Payet, right? When he was out of the team, they struggled. And I know people have talked... I've been impressed with people like Victor Moses and, you know, Sacco in bursts, but Payet's been that constant.
Mm.
I just think... And I think this is more wishful thinking. I think the top five that are there now are going to finish the top five in some guys. I'm still...
Say top four, Marvin.
I'm still holding
Don't
the candle
it,
out,
Marvin.
And you know what? It's not just
candle's
because...
Candle's blown out.
You know what? We are shit, but it's just because I would love Pep to come and City not to be in the Champions League. I would love it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I still think that could happen. I've already said that. Let's think about this. Sorry to cut in on you, Marv. Very quickly, Man City could lose tomorrow night very easily. Yeah? Man United are 3 points behind them. I know they've played a game more, but Man City have got a poor record at Anfield.
Liverpool are going to want to get revenge for what happened on Sunday. They could lose tomorrow very easily, and Man United are right behind them, and they've still got to go to Man United.
Yeah. I think the reason
if Man United go on a run, there's no reason
why.
That's
the thing. I don't think it's the points gap that makes Man United ruled out. I think it's the fact of, can you see Man United winning 4 or 5 games in a row?
Yeah, I can. Yeah, absolutely.
I can't see winning four or five games in a row.
They did it last season, and like, I still think they can do it. Because when it comes down to it, then players are playing for their futures in terms of playing in the Champions League. And the thing is, when you think about it as well, what have Man United... This is the other thing I'd like to ask, but seeing as we're talking about West Ham, is that if you're Man United, do you prefer to finish 7th or 8th outside of Europa League? If you can't finish in the top four, do you want to finish further down, or do you really want to go into the Europa League? Because Man United, a club like Man United, you don't want to be in Europa League from the get-go, surely, next season.
We've talked many times. You know how I feel about the Europa.
Well, there you go.
But we're playing Liverpool next round, right? So I'm all in. I'm all in for it. I'll go out next round, but I'll tell you.
Is that
what
a proper game now?
It's a big game. I don't want to lose to Liverpool.
So it's not going to be a game where there's a get out clause if you lose. Whoever loses that game can get out of it by saying, it's Europa League, we didn't care.
Oh, you know how I feel, right? It doesn't matter if it's Europa, it don't matter if it's the league, it don't matter if it's some flipping friendly in Hong Kong before the season starts. We do not lose to Liverpool, right? We do not lose to them. That is embarrassing. Do you hear how they speak? Do you hear how they speak
right,
day
to
day?
Let's bring it back to West Ham.
So Jude, I think it's dependent on Payet, right?
Okay.
Palace is interesting, and last time I was on this pod, right, G and O were going in on me, boasting about, look at Palace having a go, West Brom, they're not trying, da 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 da, look at Pardew, da da da. And they've been struggling.
Mm.
And I mean, who was it that...
They've got big injuries, though. They've got a big injury list, and they don't have a forward who can score regularly. But the actual crux of their first team, when everyone is fit, is very good.
Yeah, but the thing is, they haven't really had a striker that's been banging all season, but it didn't stop people getting quite, you know, excited about the way they play. And I get it, Bolasie and those guys, punching big players, right? But it's just... For me, it's just testament to the topsy-turvy league, right? Every month, like, the narrative changes. Mm. And it's great. It's great for the fans. But I think they'll be fine. They'll probably end up, you know, 14th, 15th. They're getting people back. So they'll, I don't think they'll finish much higher than that. I just think there's more people on the run. And I actually think West Brom are one of those teams, right? Because I think it finished 3-2. But yeah. West Brom blitzed them first half, right? And they never really recovered.
Mm.
They've brought Berahino back into the fold, which I think is great for him. I thought he was treated quite badly. So I think if you wanted the numbers, I'd give you West Ham 7th, Palace 15th.
Simeon, do you feel that West Palace is... What's happening over there? Is it just as simple as their best player has been out for the past 3 months? Or is there bigger problems at Palace to kind of explain? I think it's 1 win in 10.
I think injuries have really hurt their team. So I think... Interesting comparison.
But what injuries are? So I just told you on that. I know Punch been up, but when Punch was playing pre-Christmas, he wasn't great then. He wasn't having a good season,
even when he
was playing. Yeah.
You got Bolasie.
Yeah.
And finding the injury list would be hard, but I'm reading a piece today that maybe mentioned about 4 or 5 key injuries to their side, which I thought was quite significant to a team of quite a limited squad.
Mm.
An interesting comparison you might want to make with maybe Leicester to a certain extent,
mm.
where... Leicester haven't really had any injuries this season. They've had a collective team. They've had the fewest changes to their first 11 than the other side. And they've had players who can consistently do it. The only thing Crystal Palace seemed to lack was that they lacked the consistent goal scorer. But everything else they kind of had. And they had players who could really turn it on and they could really perform against top clubs. And they had a level of momentum. And that collectivism is kind of drained out by injuries. I also think what's been interesting is also about the kind of culture of a club and when personalities kind of lead to disruption. So I remember when the chap from Chelsea went to Palace, Bamford went there, and he left under a grey cloud about the way he felt that he was treated. He kind of went back and he kind of apologised, but that seemed to maybe betray maybe some other politics that was happening at the club. And then you bring in players like Adebayor, maybe that collectivism that was there had disrupted their pattern. But I do feel that their first 11 was very competitive with lots of good players in it, especially good Premier League players. But the forward was a problem, and now you're seeing that kind of foundation lead to their decline.
Do you feel, Ollie, that a big part of Palace's demise and their problem is that they started believing their, as Marvin mentioned earlier, believing their own hype before they actually achieved anything? They were talking about trying to get into Europe, I remember, like around November time, and they were playing pretty well at that point, but Pardiola, they called him over there, he was talking about, you know, I don't want to misquote, but I don't think he said we can get into Europe, but there was talk of, you know, we're heading in that kind of top seven bracket. Was that 3-4 months too premature? Is that the reason why maybe they've imploded so much? Believe their own hype.
I don't think there's any problem with being ambitious. I think it's good, and you know, the fact that they bought the players they did, and we were all impressed at the start of the season when they brought Kabay in. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you've got ambitions that you don't just want to plod along in mid-table, good luck to them. But what I would say is that Pardew is doing it again, isn't he? He's doing what he normally does, which is goes on these really disastrous runs where they can't, and the team aren't able to get out of it. And this is one of the things that the Newcastle fans didn't like him for. And they didn't get the, you know, no one ever mentioned this in the media. People are always like, why do the Newcastle fans want Pardew out? Well, it was for runs like this. This is the sort of thing that happened time and time again at Newcastle, where they'd go on a good run and they'd beat Chelsea here and there, and they'd win games, you know, big games, and then they'd go on a run where they'd go on a losing streak.
11 in a row.
Yeah, 11 in a row. The season after they finished, I think they finished fifth or sixth, and they were in the Europa League.
Yeah.
The next season, they nearly got relegated. So, you know, it's kind of, this is what you get with Pardew. And, you know, there was lots of talk about him being linked with the England job and whatever. He's the next man in line if Hodgson goes after the Euros. And now it's back down to earth again, isn't it? It's back down to earth. And, you know, earlier on, Simeon was saying something about the strikers or whatever missing. I mean, let's be honest, over January, Charlie Austin was available.
Crystal Palace could have gone and got him.
£4 million.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie Austin was a really bizarre one, because so many clubs who needed a goal scorer just didn't seem to bid for him, because at £4 million, that's an absolute snip. So clearly, the demand was not there for him, because the demand was there, he would have been going for 10 million.
And just finally, just going back to West Ham now, what do you think? I might have a West Ham fan coming on in the next couple of weeks, but what do you think, Simeon? we're trying to spread the love,
It's a joke, it's a joke, okay?
Simeon, what do you think West Ham fans would prefer? Going into Olympic Stadium next season, win the FA Cup this season, finish top four? You're on one today, aren't you? Finish top four or win the FA Cup?
Probably 50-50, isn't it? I imagine the ambition of the club is obviously Champions
League. The fans, what do you think the fans would prefer?
I imagine if you asked a West Ham fan who hasn't had silverware in a long time, probably 50-50. Some would probably say, we want the Champions League, we go into a top competition and we have a great ground. And some would say, well, we want the silverware. I mean, maybe this is harsh, but West Ham have never really been a side that have had championship ambitions. And so perhaps silverware actually is maybe what matters to them now, just actually having their day at Wembley, getting on that district line, riding up and singing on the train.
That day out. Briefly,
I was just going to say, I think they asked Bilic the same question, didn't they?
And he said
was
cup,
like,
didn't he?
He wants to win the cup, because he was like, Champions League, we'll get there, we'll probably get packed out by Barcelona or whatever, but a cup, I can hold that. We can have our day. The fans get some photo ops. We go to Wembley. We climb the stairs. And I thought that was quite refreshing in a time where the FA Cup has just basically been seen as...
It's been dwarfed by the Champions League, hasn't it?
It's nice to have, but when it comes down to it, the Premiership teams are the Premier League teams are focused on the Premier League.
Mm.
And, you know, they will rest players like Man City did. So I thought it was refreshing for Bilic, who's been a West Ham player and played. I thought that was quite nice to hear.
I actually personally think West Ham will be this next season's Leicester. I think West Ham are gonna really, not title challenge next season, but I think they're gonna be really strong top four contenders next season.
Joel,
my prediction.
Do you think there's no chance of Leicester being next season's Leicester? That was a question I was asked last night.
Possible, i.e. bottom six.
No, I mean,
they continue.
Will they? If yeah, will
oh,
they?
Oh, title challenge.
Yeah,
no.
Bearing in mind they'll have the potentially have a Champions League to rotate players?
No, I think Klopp will make Liverpool better. I think Mopo will make Spurs better. I think Mourinho, if you get him next season, do you understand, there'll be just too many teams with good managers that will make them significantly better, that will gobble up Leicester City next season.
And maybe Mahrez won't be there anymore.
Yeah, I think they'll do well to finish top 10 next season.
Harsh, yeah. Wow.
Well, if he touches them right now, you'll be 10th next year. They'll probably take that.
Well, I do think you've got to bear in mind that Champions League might take a lot out of them unless they seriously increase the depth of their squad. Then the Champions League games,
even playing if they those, because it'll be new territory.
Playing those games and because they'll go straight in, won't they?
Yeah, yeah.
So playing those games and then playing the weekend games will be a whole different ball game for them, won't it?
All right, guys, let's move on to our last topic. I want to talk a little bit about penalties. And the reason for this is I want to find out from you guys what you feel the best way to take a penalty to take it is. Because I noticed about a year or so ago the significant difference between how the foreign players take penalties and how the British take penalties. So I noticed that people like Hazard, Benteke, Cazorla, Aguero, Mata and Mahrez have that kind of similar kind of stance where they kind of, it's a really kind of cool pause, wait for the keeper to drop and then place it with not a lot of power. Whereas you have people like Rooney, Kane, Vardy, Berahino, Lambert and Milner, they'll just smash it with power to the point where even if the keeper gets to the right side, the power is just too much. Start with you, Ollie, on this one. Do you have a preference to how you like your players to take penalties? Is it more important to be cute and accurate, or is it more important to kind of just smash it and get it on target to the point where if the keeper saves it, it's that powerful, he can't keep it up?
I always like the penalty takers who smashed it in top corners, and that shows the supreme confidence. That's someone who's got the technique and they've got it right.
It's harder as well.
Of course it's harder. But the thing is, in your mind, you are confident that, you know, I'm going to place this wherever I'm going to put my foot through it as well, and you ain't saving this. And I've always preferred those penalty takers from way back who used to just blast it.
Julian Dix, Alan Shearer.
Them sort of proper penalty takers. I don't like all this sort of, I'm going to try and trick you. And that's, to me, that's kind of... You ain't got enough confidence in yourself that you're having to gum up and you're fainting before you shoot, and it's like, I'm going to watch you go down. The old style guys, right? They were just like,
I don't care
what you do, right? I'm going to hit this so hard, I'm going to hit it in the roof of the net. It don't matter where you dive, you're not saving it. And I've just got more respect for those guys who take penalties like that, because that just shows to me that you got total belief in your technique and ability to score a goal from 12 yards and the keeper ain't going to get anywhere near it.
Go on, Simeon.
I think that the division or disparity in the way that British play or English players take penalties and foreign exports take penalties betrays why the English football side is so weak and the primitive nature of English football. You see, I remember watching, now I'm gonna go around the circle, hopefully I can get there. I remember watching, was it 2010, England Championships, England versus Germany, and Germany just blitzing England with so much technique, pace, everything that England were not, Germany had. And now, for me, a lot of the differences in people who are asking why can't we produce players like this is actually when we do produce players who express themselves with technique, with trickery, we hollow them out and say, you don't quite fit in, because our game is about pace and it's about power. A good example is Joe Cole. Very talented player. If he was Italian or South American, he would have prospered. Now he's probably playing what, League One football, I believe, somewhere. That's how mismanaged he was, because he had a different ethos. And I think that when we teach young players...
He was managed by foreign managers, though, a lot of the time,
I mean,
at Chelsea.
It didn't matter. The culture of English football remains the same. And the demands are really interesting as well. When a player is so skilled in the Premier League, they have a word for it. They call it showboating. I think, why did that word even exist in our vocabulary? I mean, it's a negative connotation to to a piece of expression, which football is supposed to be about. Expression, skill. And this is a thinking man's game that relies on all these particular nuances that we never embrace. Our game is so visceral, it's so based on power, it's so based on pace, that actually the nuances that enable you to really actually compete at higher levels, we don't do. And so I think that actually the way that we take penalties is a part of that entire culture, which is why the English side is so poor.
I tell you, and you've gone around the houses here, Simeon, but you're talking nonsense.
I remember
Euro 96, right? When England played Germany, yeah, in that semi-final, when Germany took those penalties. Go back and watch it on YouTube sometime. Watch the penalties that Germany took. Every one of their penalties, right, was in the roof of the net. It didn't matter where Seaman dived. It didn't matter if you went right or left or whatever. Every penalty they hit, they put their foot through it and they put it in the roof of the net. What that shows to me, Simeon, is players who have supreme belief in their ability and they're not psyched out by the occasion.
The
issue that England players had is that when it came down to it in that penalty shootout, they bricked it. They were like, oh, God, I don't want to take penalties. The Germans... when it comes down to taking a penalty, right, they never shirk the responsibility.
No,
the thing is, not only do they not shirk the responsibility, but in moments of big, big pressure, right, they're prepared to put their foot through the ball and put it in the roof of the net. And that's got nothing. That has got nothing to do with what you were just saying. Because they're German.
Our game. Our game is so visceral.
I just told you the Germans play. They hit penalties
Germans, especially counting the Germans today, are far more pragmatic. Everything's about technique and everything is about being precise. So the thing to take away from those penalties is that they're precise and that they can make decisions and that they can be cold. That's what to take away from it. Not that the fact that they blasted it, because actually they'll take a whole range of penalties and it could be a tapping or not. It could be a side foot.
But my
point is that over history, Germans have taken a whole range of different types of penalties. They've used power or they've used side foot. The thing that is consistent is the fact that it's precise and it's cold. My point is that we, in British players, even when they're missing penalties, they're blasting it. And that's one thing you always notice, which is probably why Jordan asked the question. And I feel that betrays the fact that actually there's a lack of thought, there's a lack of guile, there's a lack of nuance to actually other countries, because they see football as a way of using forms of expression and being a bit more
Have you got examples to this? When I look at the penalties that were taken at in the League Cup final the other day,
yeah,
the ones that were missed were by people like Coutinho. He's not English and he was trying to be clever. So I don't know what you're talking about. The penalty takers that missed, most of them were trying to be clever.
That's like my point. They're trying to think differently.
But he missed.
I'm not saying that a player who's not British had never missed a penalty before. That's a ridiculous statement. What I'm saying, though, is that the fact that British players are more likely to blast it, and not even necessarily score, but just blast it, shows that our game is so much based on pace and based on power and based on instinct. And actually, outside of this country, I think that the way that young players are taught to play football is based on expression.
I agree with that to a point, Simeon, but you are massively generalising it. Because there's plenty of penalty takers, English penalty takers, and I'm not saying that your general point about the pace and power and people kind of putting passion and all the rest of it and giving that too much focus in the English game. I understand that, but that's got nothing to do with taking penalties. And there's plenty of English players who take penalties and side foot them. You know, I think you've massively generalised.
Yeah, I mean, I was listening as a spectator there, because maybe I'm just not taking it as seriously as everyone else is, Joe, but I think Simeon took the point way too broad, right? Because I agree with 90% of what he said about the fact that there is a technical element of the English game that is missing. But I think we're talking about penalties here, right? And as Ol said, you know, I've watched Mata miss him, I've watched Herrera miss him. Like, I don't think it's a nationality thing. It's between you and the keeper.
It's true.
And you know, the amount of times where I think England have flopped at penalties, I think David Batty took a shocking one.
Oh God.
And
yeah,
they were like, he never even practiced them and stuff like that. And you just think to yourself, forget about nationality. If you are confident enough to take a penalty, you've got to have your belief in yourself and you've got to have your own technique. If you're thinking, what should I do when I'm walking up to this penalty, you've already flopped
it. No, but hang on.
You've got to know. And I think Chan took a really cocky penalty where he just like dinked it, keeper moved. And I think this is not down to nationality. This was Chan being confident in Chan, right? It's as simple as that. And the thing that annoys me, if you blast it and you miss, fair enough. If you've always blasted it and sometimes you score, like Lampard drilled it down the middle like 9 times out of 10 and keepers still didn't save it. It was a confidence thing because keepers are thinking, you know what, this time he might put it to the right of me, he might put it to the left of me. Instead,
Lampard
drilled,
was confident in
yeah,
himself that
it
he
was,
knew.
It was just a pure confidence thing. The thing that I hate, sorry to cut you, see me, but the thing I hate is, don't take a shit penalty. If it's a P roller or if it's some crap, it's nothing to do with the internet. You have not thought this through.
Right, hang on. Sorry, hold your point.
So look, depending on the framework by which you're looking at football in a penalty shootout, there's one player taking a penalty against the goalkeeper. It's one versus one. On that level, you can rationalize it as individual versus individual. Cool. Jordan's question was about collective behavioral patterns. And he said that he's noticed a differentiation in the way that foreign exports take penalties and English players. And what did that say?
Yeah, but he just named people to prove his point. Like Teddy Sheringham took a lovely penalty and he weren't blasting it.
It's a general point.
And there were English players with brilliant technique.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what I'm saying, it's the individual versus the keeper.
But we're looking at collective behavioural patterns. And I think that there is something to be learned from the fact that...
What I'm asking is that there's a quite obvious distinction between how the English players take penalties. I've been watching for the last year and how the foreign players take penalties.
Did you see Dennis Irwin take a penalty?
Who's sorry?
Dennis Irwin. Roof of the net every time, corner. But the thing about it is, I don't think, fair enough, I 100% agree with Simeon that there's probably times on a training pitch with under 16, someone does something fancy. Some cockney coach goes, what are you doing? You flipping...
Put
it in a mixer. That happens.
Put it in a mixer. You
know that happens. But I don't think if a young 15-year-old took a sexy penalty with confidence and panache and scored, they're going to say to him, that was good, but you know what? The keeper might have got to that. Next time, put your foot through it. I think Simeon is right. But I think you can make the. I think it's a pure confidence game, right? So, because we've seen so many penalties go through the middle, and I know you've used a bit about the culture, but I just think it's an individual thing. Mata has missed many penalties, so has Herrera. I don't think Rooney takes a good penalty, but he scored a lot that he shouldn't have because it's just a belief thing, right? Bergkamp took some lovely penalties. Yeah. You know, it's just a mixture.
It was triggered. I've noticed this for about a year and a half, like I say, but it was triggered by Coutinho's miss on Sunday, because I've always said there's three things, if I'm a football manager, I'd fine players for. The first is, if you concede in the first few minutes of a game, you're getting fined. There's no excuse for that, in my view. Foul throws, you're getting fined. There's no excuse for that. And if you do one of those Panenkas and you miss, you're getting fined. So for me, Coutinho should have been fined, because if you do that and score... You scored the goal. I don't give a damn what you do. But if you're going to... That is an arrogance at the highest.
That's a shocking mentality to have there.
I don't think it is, because he missed.
That's a shocking mentality.
That is the problem.
No, it's not the problem. It's a final. It's a final. Score the penalty. Yeah, you've got more chance of doing it with confidence than you have by trying to be this cocky.
Well, he probably was confident. That's why you're talking like that. To be honest, you can't do that without confidence in front of 100,000.
Yeah, I don't think he was.
I don't think he was confident.
He wasn't confident at all.
I mean, I remember watching him thinking, based on Sterling's performance, he definitely should not take a penalty, right? And he didn't. You know what I mean? And I think you're harsh with the firing process. A foul throw is stupid, right? But. You can't constitute like I think Chelsea's scored today in the first minute. We ain't seen it, but you don't know.
It shows to me that you're not prepared. You're not ready for the game. There's the first 3 minutes of a game. You let in a goal.
I remember Tottenham.
Nah,
Tottenham. I think conceded a goal. This was many moons ago
against Newcastle.
And then they were like pulling up their socks or whatever.
Straight from
that's not acceptable.
It wasn't acceptable.
I don't care if you're fined. You're professional.
But that was halfway through the game. Do you know what I mean?
But anyway, but back to the point. Am I wrong in drawing a line in that how the Brits and Harry Kane's one takes a very good penalty down the middle, to how, say, maybe Hazard takes a penalty, in that I think he's missed one or two in the last couple of years, but his penalty is very, 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 it's the same pretty much. It's that kind of quick run up, stop, and then he plants it in the other corner.
Yeah, but he's lost his mojo now. He's,
yeah, this
you
year
know,
he's been poor. But
yeah, but that's what I'm saying.
That's a wider problem,
sort of,
though, isn't it?
Those sort of penalty takers, after a while, I think they kind of lose it because they get psyched out. He's lost it now. He's completely lost it. I think that you can't, but this is my point I'm making. You can get to that point. If you're in a one-off penalty shootout situation, right, and you get asked to take a penalty and you do a Pirlo, right, what Pirlo did against England, that's fine. But if you think you're going to do that on a regular basis over the course of a season, you get X amount of penalties over the course of the season, you're going to keep dinking it over the keeper and fainting all the time. After a while, I think that gets people start working that stuff out. You know what I mean? I think that someone like Kane, who sort of hits penalties different places, but he hits them properly. I think that those are difficult
high percentage
to save.
Of scoring.
They're difficult to save. I think you can get away with the fainting and whatever, and it all looks nice when it comes off. But as you just said, in a big game, right, I'd prefer if Coutinho missed, he put his foot through it,
yeah.
He put his foot through that ball and he missed, right, honestly, than doing what he did the other day. Well, I just think that's unforgivable. Mm. You're in a final and you've got a chance to score from 12 yards and you're arsing about trying to, like, oh, I'm going to be really clever and just wait for you
it's
to go down. And then,
it's about you
just,
then.
Yeah,
it's not
just
the team,
nonsense.
It's about you.
It's
yeah.
nonsense. I just think hit the damn thing, hit it properly, find a corner, right, and
English
get and
man.
Score.
The English.
And score.
Give it some welly.
Final point, Marvin. With the Euros coming up, do you think that penalty takers will play a bearing on who Hodgson takes striker-wise? Because Kane takes pens, Vardy takes pens, Berahino takes pens, Sturridge doesn't, Welbeck doesn't. Do you think that will be in his thinking?
Nah, okay. I think it's got to come.
It can't be.
It's got to come down to
form.
Yeah, it's got to come down to form
and fitness.
It's really interesting, right? Because I want to see what he'll do with Sturridge, and I want to see what he'll do with Welbeck. Because Welbeck's basically missed the whole season. Mm. He's come in. He could potentially get in there. Sturridge has been a very patchy. Mm. You could easily see him going with them and then getting injured after the first game. So strikers is really interesting. I mean, I'll be the first one to hold my hands up. And I was like, Vardy ain't going, right? I just think he's going to run out of steam. And where he's not doing it at the level he was doing it probably the
best. But if he stays fit, he's going, isn't he?
Yeah, he's just a problem, George. You think yourself, going back to Simeon's point about these technically gifted Italians. And
he's the opposite. He just gives you problems.
Yeah, Vardy will trouble those back lines. Yeah. And that's a nice thing to have, at least, even if it's coming off the bench. So... Mm. We'll see, but I don't think it will come down to it. But I've seen in training, at least, Danny Welbeck can take a good pen. So, Roy, don't let that sway you.
I've really seen him take one. But okay, and just finally, I just want to do a quick pundit watch because I know you were a bit upset with the anti-United panel on Sky for Super Sunday.
Yeah.
You felt it was a little bit anti. And I made the point back that I've seen plenty of panels on Super Sunday that are heavily United. What was your beef beyond that? And how big a problem do you think that was in terms of being a broadcasting program and being impartial?
You know what? I'm just a bit of an arsehole when it comes to this, right? Because, listen, this is a big game,
just in
right?
general, yeah.
It's a big game, and now you're rolling out David Platt. David Platt's been under some rock. He's in Singapore or some shit like that. And now David Platt gets to do this and tell us about how it was back in the day, blah, blah, blah. You got Thierry on the left licking his ass. Graham Souness is as Liverpool as it's going to get. He talks like you did, Jordan, until we packed the shit out of you on Sunday. United are on the ropes, blah, blah, blah. Now I still got to do it, blah, 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 blah. And I was sitting there. And you know what, Jordan? I'm fine if there's no Man United panel, but it was a lynching, right? And David Platt just did not deserve to be there. You know what, David? I'll see you on a Monday night football game and I'll see you on something quiet. I'll see you, on Gillette if Charlie's not well or people realise that Paul Merson's an absolute idiot. But for them to play David Platt's, a VT of David Platt's Arsenal heyday, then ask David
it,
Platt...
It was one
he,
goal,
he didn't
wasn't
have
it?
An Arsenal
it was one
heyday.
Goal, wasn't it, against United?
And then it was... What have you been doing? I've been walking my dog and blah, blah, blah. We're talking about Man United Arsenal and then we've got the Capital One final and you got David Platt on my TV talking about him walking his dog and watches. I don't give a sh... I don't care. I don't care. I never wanted to see him. I would have rather... And this is where I care because I would have rather Jamie Carragher sitting there than flipping David Platt. I couldn't believe it. And I tell you what, This Thierry Henry thing is getting to me, right? He is not giving me anything. He's giving me nothing. The only things he gives me is an Arsenal point of view. So let's just get any Arsenal fan off the terrace to tell us, yeah, we should win the league. No shit, Thierry. No shit. I can't believe it. It's you know what? I'm happy Gary. I mean, Gary Neville got packed out this weekend, didn't he? He got packed out. I saw that. But he
that was not nice.
He was on a little like bit of a run.
3 goals in a minute or something.
And George, the thing is, he was on a little bit of a run. And then when he had the run, I was like, oh, I'm happy because you were really on the end there, Gary. And I thought, but you know, plus side, you come back to punditry. You know, we could do with your perspective. And then he got packed out. But I tell you what, I weren't happy at all.
What about when Souness took Arsenal apart at the end, though?
Yeah, you know what? Souness, fair play. He's just a grumpy old man, isn't it? It's like Roy Keane in 10 years. Like, that's what Graham Souness is. And he calls it how he sees it. But before the game, right, he was so... He was almost like, this Man United team are awful, blah, blah, blah. And Thierry's like, yes, I agree. This is the time where Arsenal can... And I just thought to myself...
But now you see the pain I go through. No, when we have to watch a Spurs-Arsenal game, right? And it's like Niall Quinn's doing a... He's terrible. I got to tell you as well. He is terrible. I don't know why you got Niall Quinn doing the co... No, sorry. You got Niall Quinn in the studio, Alan Smith doing the co-commentary, right? And Thierry in the studio as well. I'm like, God damn, please.
And George, you know what? I'm on your side, right? Because there has been some United panels where Neville's been there and they've had Yorkie or whatever. It's happened a lot on BT Sport. And their punditry is awful. Whether it be Scholes, Hargreaves kills me every time. Like, I'm not for a Man United panel at all, right? I'll be honest and say the BT Sport one, when they've had Ferdinand, Hargreaves and Scholes or whatever, has
ridiculous.
Been awful.
Yeah.
Because what fans want is points of view. The reason why you have a Spurs fan, an Arsenal fan, a Man United fan is because we're going to disagree. Graham Souness had to change his point of view because the youngsters that he just chastised before the game packed Arsenal out. if they lost, he would have been singing off the same hymn sheet that he was singing at the beginning with Thierry. And I think Sky and BT Sport even more so. Take a look at yourself. We won. Points of view. If you've got all Arsenal or all Arsenal and some grumpy old Liverpool man, you ain't getting what you need. I couldn't believe it.
Okay, all right. I just wanted to allow you to have that space to rant because I know that it upset you. I loved it, but yeah.
You loved it, yeah. Why don't you tell us on Sunday? Where were you? You should have told us you loved it on Sunday. So that concludes
this week's Football Fans Podcast. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining us this week. Don't forget to subscribe for free via the iTunes Football Fans Podcast. Follow us on Twitter, FFP_11, and join in on the debate. Until next week, peace.